This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. Masters Monday, I guess, as we'll be recapping the tournament won by Hideki Matsuyama, a historic victory for the country of Japan. Was it a good Masters? Depends. It was really fun on Saturday when Matsuyama was rolling through after the rain delay, but the fireworks that you normally want to see at Augusta, the whole everything starts on the back nine on Sunday thing didn't really occur. But we'll get into that. Schauffele's mistake at 16, Spieth's no charge, and Will Zalatoris, who many of us didn't even know was a person until this weekend, really started to make a name for himself. We'll also get into a Heisman Trophy winner who left a pretty good gig to take a new gig. And if you thought we were done picking on the New York Mets, you're wrong, because they did something yesterday that was just rather funny, amusing, and absolutely silly. We got all that coming up on the show today, but we're going to spend a lot of time talking about the Masters, because it is the first golf tournament, a major tournament of the year. It's one of the historical events in all of sports, and it was won by a golfer who a lot of people were pegging to eventually win a major. Hideki Matsuyama is one of the best ball strikers on tour. He has won a number of times on the PGA Tour, and everybody who has played with him, everybody who knows him, knows his game is major level. They were just waiting for him to break through. And it came at Augusta National, and it came where he was able to separate himself so much from the field on Saturday after the rain delay had softened the course up a little bit, where he was just making birdies and just entered the final round with a nice cushion. But we've seen cushions in the past at Augusta fall away. That course has a way of eating you up sometimes when you're not on your game. It looked early as if Matsuyama wasn't, but nobody else made the charge that you wanted to see to put any real pressure on him. We'll talk about the Masters, the historic win for Japan, what it means, and who wasn't around over the weekend. As we continue, hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that's Ron with two N's. It is Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio. Thanks for joining us on Monday.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Trade up any non-contact thermometer for a $5 rebate towards an Exergen purchase at any retailer. Accuracy matters more than ever when taking temperature. And published research shows non-contact models miss 5 out of 7 fevers. Upgrade to Exergen, the only home forehead thermometer proven accurate by published peer-reviewed clinical studies. Details at Exergen.com. All right, so the Masters in the books. Hideki Matsuyama of Japan, the winner, fired a 73. That's a 1-over par total on Sunday, but that was good for a one-shot win over Will Zalatoris. If you didn't watch the Masters at all and you just looked at the leaderboard, you might have thought it was kind of fun, right? A one-shot victory, 3 shots over the next guys, but it wasn't. It wasn't a really thrilling final round. To be honest with you, it was boring at times, and Hideki Matsuyama and Xander Schauffele were the slowest two golfers I think I've ever seen in a final round in my life. I mean, those guys were taking forever to play that round of golf. But in the end, I think this is what you get when you have a rain delay on Saturday and a guy goes out there and posts a lot of birdies and he gives himself a really nice cushion going into Sunday's final round. And when he hit the ball to the right on the first hole and the ball was in the trees and he's trying to punch out and he makes bogey, I thought, well, you know, I've seen this before. I've seen guys with leads in the Masters, a couple of shots, and they fail to deliver. This course can really get you, especially on Sunday. There's a reason why that whole line, the Masters doesn't start till the back nine on Sunday. It can trick you. It can balk and give you a funny bounce. It's just a weird course. Sidehill lies, uphill lies, downhill lies, greens that don't hold. And I thought, well, if Matsuyama's going to struggle and he's going to feel the pressure, we might have something. The problem is, none of the other golfers really made a move on him early, didn't put any pressure on him early. Xander Schauffele didn't do it. In fact, Schauffele really struggled in the opening round, made a bogey at three, made a bogey at four, made a double at five. So after both of them made birdies at two, he's putting himself out of contention after five holes. Now, he got on a birdie train with birdies at 7, 8, 12, 13, 14, and 15 to make it interesting. But by then, Matsuyama was building up a lead. Spieth never made a run at him. Spieth struggled on the front nine as well. Again, a few more birdies started pouring out on the back nine for him, but he never made a push. Will Zalatoris was probably the one guy that was closing the gap because he birdied the first two holes, but then made bogey at three to give one back. And the par fives, birdieing the par fives at Augusta doesn't mean anything. The other guy is expected to do exactly that, right? So if you make a birdie at eight, well, you're expecting the leader to do pretty much the same thing. It's making birdies on the tougher holes, 10, 9, 12, 11. If you can get some birdies at holes where the field isn't scoring, that's where you can start winning the Masters. Nobody was really able to do that. Now, it did get interesting on the back nine in one particular way, and that was Xander Schauffele started birdieing some holes. And when he did, Matsuyama was playing some bogey golf, made bogey at 12, right? And then bogeyed 15 when he put it in the water on 16. Like, so he hit the pulled hook that went so far past the green, it went into the pond on 16 behind the hole. But he salvaged a bogey. He didn't make the gigantic number. He didn't make the double. He didn't make the triple. He didn't get sloppy. He did bogey 16. He bogeyed 18, which ended up being a formality, and he won. When you have a leader that can shoot a 39 on the back nine at Augusta and still win the golf tournament by one, you didn't really have a golf tournament. You didn't really have a competitive golf tournament. I mean, as exciting as the names were, Xander Schauffele, one of the best players to have never won a Masters, Jordan Spieth always plays well here. Will Zalatoris, this 24-year-old kid you never heard of, John Rahm was making him up. Nobody brought any heat to Matsuyama, who wins the green jacket. And it's a historic win. He becomes the first player from Japan to win the green jacket. It's his first major championship. It's the first Japanese male player to win a major championship. There's a whole bunch to unpack on the history of the 2021 Masters and what it's going to mean. You heard it in the broadcast if you watched it. They talked a lot about him carrying a country on his shoulders. And we've heard that term before a number of times. When you have an international player and the country doesn't produce a lot of that particular individual, it can be anything. It can be golf. It can be tennis. It can be auto racing. It can be whatever it is. There's always a feeling like he's doing it more, not just for himself, but for his country. But that's the case. They're golf crazy in Japan. They love the game. They cherish their athletes, their successful athletes. I read one story last night that speculated, and again, it's just speculation, but somebody who wrote it really knew the economics, that Matsuyama winning the Masters and becoming the first Japanese player to win a men's professional major and a green jacket, that is going to be worth to him around $600 million in American money. He could be close to $1 billion. They are going to rain money on him for a very, very long time. A lot of companies are going to tag this guy for a long time if that's an avenue he wants to go down. So, again, historic. Was it exciting? Not really. Xander Schauffele will probably never forget 16 and the 8-iron that landed in the water. I got to tell you something. When I was a kid, guys used to drop that ball in that water all the time. I remember all the time. It was such a devastating hole. It felt like the last couple of years, nobody was really doing it. Like, it was just, I don't know if it was too easy. It's a 9-iron now for these guys. It's an 8-iron, you know, in some cases, depending on the wind. It doesn't feel like water is really in play as much as it, like when I was younger, it was in play all the time. I think it was a lower club, it was more like 6-iron, 7-iron for the guys back when I was younger. So that had a tendency to get pulled a little bit. But, you know, guys are hitting wedge into this some days, 9-iron in some days, 8-iron, and it's hard to pull those kind of shots. But Xander Schauffele did, and he pulled it a little bit. It came up a little short, landed in the drink, and that was it. The shot that Matsuyama hit on 15 was silly. I mean, that thing was cooking. Like when you have the lead at the Masters, you got to sometimes, it's okay to play conservative. I know everybody talks about, well, if that's your style, you got to be aggressive. You don't always have to be aggressive. Like if you're on a downhill lie into a downhill green, hit it short. Hit your wedge in there. Make your two punts and get the hell out of there. I think he felt like Schauffele was just not going to stop making birdies. And I think he was worried that if he played conservative, that Schauffele would catch him. And I think that's one of the reasons he thought, well, I'm going for the screen in two, even though my lie may not absorb this. Will Zalatoris, though, man, that kid is amazing. That kid's not even on the PGA Tour. That's how incredible his run at the Masters was. He finished sixth at the U.S. Open. He was on the Corn Ferry Tour, which is like their minor league tour, like their AAA golf tour. He won the TPC of Colorado. But he's played in a number of PGA events, getting exemptions and whatnot. And now he just made himself $1.2 million playing this week at the Masters. And I hope somebody buys him a meal with real calories to it. Because that is one thin individual. He must weigh 95 pounds.
My favorite thing about him is that he got tweeted by Adam Sandler.
Yeah, because he looks like the kid who caddied for him.
You know,
and we responded back.
But when you see the side-by-side photos of them,
it's pretty close.
I mean, that's him. I think that's just him grown up.
Listen, here's the deal. I follow golf to an extent. I don't follow it every week, but I have no idea who he was.
But wouldn't it have been almost poetic if he did win? Because that seems to happen every so often with the Masters, that you hear from this person that you didn't really know of at all, and then they win the Masters, and then they disappear
again.
Well,
I gotta correct you on that. Nobody has won the Masters as a rookie since Fuzzy Zeller in 1979. And Fuzzy Zeller was a known entity. Rookies don't win the Masters in their first.
No, I get that, but I'm just saying.
But they show up and they
a no name kid that comes
out there
and wins it.
Yeah, Jordan Spieth in 2014 lost to Bubba Watson, then won it the next year. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
There is always somebody that plays particularly well you never heard of. I thought his game was great. I mean, I thought it was excellent. He could hit. I mean, he hit. Andy North said it on ESPN. He hit professional shots, which was his way of saying at Augusta, you need to know where to put the ball. That's a golf course, man. When you play with your buddies and you guys and you go out there and you shoot for the flag, like there's the flag, so I'm aiming at the flag. If you did that at Augusta National, you'd shoot 10 over par. Like you do not aim for the flags at Augusta National. You aim 30 yards to the right of the flag or 30 yards to the left of flag in some holes. And then the hole feeds down or feeds up wherever it goes. You have to play to certain areas of that green, because going at the flag, it'll just bounce off and go to the bunker or bounce off and go in a different direction. It's a golf course where you really have to know how to play the angles. Like, you know that famous chip that Tiger Woods had where he hit it up the slope on 16 and went in the hole?
Yeah.
People are amazed by that. People are blown away by that. But Masters experts know that's exactly what that hole does, right? Davis Love made a chip there one time. People who know the Masters know that's what the hole does. Those guys know that. They practice that slope all the time on that green. Now, it's still amazing he made it, and he made it with the cut of rough that he made it, so the chip is still amazing. But it's not amazing that he read it that way, because that's how all the pros read it. They just know, if you've been around that golf course, you know the angles. He played all the angles. He was playing all of the right ways. That's something you don't see Masters rookies do. You see Masters rookies say things like, well, I got to really learn this place. Like, but he knew, I'm going to hit my bunker shot 15 feet this way, and it's going to go this way. I'm going to hit my iron shot 10 yards over here. It's going to funnel this way. I mean, the guy was 9 under par, and that should have won the Masters in most years. That was that good of a tournament for him. And I hope now he gets a little PGA Tour love.
Maybe we'll start talking about him a little bit more.
I hope so, because
he doesn't disappear.
Super talented guy, man. All right, when we come back, a Heisman Trophy winner, former NFL star, had a really good job doing something else. Now he has another job doing something else besides the other job he left the football he did after football. Confused? Well, you won't be. I'll get you that story next on Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts for their spring break deals on lawn and garden batteries, tools, brake kits, and more. Kick off the season right with fresh batteries for your lawn and garden gear. For a limited time, purchase any Superstar lawn and garden battery. Get a $10 gift card after mail-in rebate. Don't miss out on the savings. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit O'ReillyAuto.com. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. Before we get to this football story of Eddie George, I just saw Darren Rovell tweet that a 1997 Tiger Woods autographed Masters flag sold for less than $8,000 at an auction. That seems incredibly low to me, does that not?
His star hasn't fallen yet, right?
Does that still have... All right, here's the official price, $7,625 at an auction, a 1997 Masters flag autographed by Tiger Woods.
That's, you know what that is? That's someone who doesn't know who, that was a whole group of people who didn't know who Tiger Woods are.
It's clear that that was the case. We got this Masters flag signed by this Tiger Woods person.
Yep.
I don't know who that is, but it's kind of cool. It's a flag from the Masters. It's got a signature on it. I don't know what relevance that has, but who wants this?
That was that.
Somebody
the,
went, I don't know, $7,625 sold. Get
was
out of here.
Was that the Living Under a Rock auction?
That must have been. That should have sold for $25,000
at least.
I mean, I don't know. I'm just throwing that number out there. I'm not an aficionado of collectibles.
Well, I mean, does Tiger Woods sign much stuff?
Well, even if he does, it seems like how many flags from the Masters is Tiger Woods signing? Unless that's a fake, like I bought it at the store flag that he said,
right,
not an official
Masters flag.
But it doesn't look like it. It looks like it's an official flag from the pin. So if it's one of 18,
yeah,
Tiger Woods signed it, it seems like it would go for at least $50,000, 25, 50 grand.
I would like to think Tiger maybe he signed 18 of them.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe
every
so.
Time he's like, yeah, I dominated the bleep out of this hole. I'll sign this flag.
Anyway. So Eddie George is now the new head coach at Tennessee State, here where I live in Nashville.
Didn't even know that was a school, but go ahead.
I didn't either. Well, I knew when I moved here. Here's the cool thing about Eddie George, though. A couple of years ago, I was in New York City, and we were in Times Square near the theater district. And I was walking around with my family, and we looked up, and there was this huge billboard, and it had Eddie George's picture on it. And it said in big letters above where Eddie George's picture was, Chicago, starring Eddie George. He was on Broadway playing in the musical Chicago. So Eddie George, Heisman Trophy winner from Ohio State, Tennessee Titan legend, was a Broadway actor. And so naturally my curiosity peaked, right? Because I don't know much about theater. I've been to a number of Broadway plays. I like Broadway plays. They're cool. I like I like talented people doing their thing. So people who act like 6 days a week instead of a movie, like you have to do the same thing 6 days a week. That's pretty talented. Sing, dance, play an instrument, whatever. So I started asking my theater friends, like I have people who know theater, and I said, okay, have you seen Chicago with Eddie George? Now, most of the people I talked to were women who did not know who Eddie George was. So I said, did you see Chicago with Eddie George in it? Yes. How was Eddie George? And a couple of them said he was really, really good. He was really good. Now, listen, I'm not naive enough to think that he beat out every single actor for the role. I'm sure the production company wanted a former NFL player turned actor to star in this. That's why he got a huge billboard in Times Square at the time. But I thought that's where he's going. He's going to be like a number of NFL players who have gone to the acting ranks. Dick Butkus, Alex Karras, Fred Dreyer. Who else has gone into acting recently? Michael Strahan's gone into television commentary, like Good Morning America level commentary, not just sports, but you know, using his personality.
Could we say LeBron James?
LeBron James, well, I mean, I don't know, maybe
he's done a couple of things.
Not really, because he's an athlete acting in something. I mean, like people who now make a living acting.
Okay,
like they're done. Like Alex Karras and Webster. Like he was done football and then he turned to acting.
Yeah.
Dick Butkus was in a number of things, including the TV show My Two Dads, which he played a guy in a bar. But he was in a number of other things. There's a whole bunch of them. Ed Marinara, I think, was in Hill Street Blues. There's a whole bunch of guys Carl Weathers. Talk about being a real actor.
The other, Terry Crews.
Yeah, that's right.
We didn't really know he was a football player.
Right, but he became, you know, an actor, right? The Rock. Okay,
The Rock,
we're going to go down that road. Might as well, right?
He was a college football player.
But nevertheless, Eddie George became a Broadway performer. I mean, he was in movies. He was in a Broadway play. I mean, a real play. Like, not just like something like you find like in New Jersey that's
not,
trying
not
to get
community theater.
Right. He was like in a legit $100 a ticket play that he had to be there every night.
And it wasn't one of those roles where it's like, hey, come see so-and-so play the part of, you know, whatever, you know, one night only type of thing.
Right,
you'll get
only,
that from time to time.
Sure, absolutely. We took my mother and father took everybody in the family to see Cinderella with Fran Drescher. As the stepmother.
Okay, I was about to say.
Cinderella. No.
I can see her as a stepmother.
Yeah, the prince with the slipper. Yeah. It was great. She was fantastic. Anyways, now the head coach at Tennessee State. He's done the same thing that Deion Sanders is doing, becoming a football coach. And I don't know if this will be good. The Tennessee State plays in, I think, the OVC. So, you know, and he's going to bring in Hugh Jackson on board. So this relatively small college, small football program in Nashville that is under the, you know, Vanderbilt and Tennessee Volunteers and Alabama that kind of hover over the city, Tennessee State is going to have Eddie George as the head coach and Hugh Jackson as an assistant coach. I think it's pretty remarkable.
Not too shabby.
Not too shabby at all. So, but again, Deion Sanders is at Jackson State now.
And having success.
Not bad. Doing pretty good. Right? He's doing pretty good. We'll see. Now, here was the funny thing about this story that was kind of brought up. Eddie George goes, he'd never been a head coach before, but he's mentored Derrick Henry. Does that count? Are those comparable skills? Like, I've given advice, my running back advice to another running back. Now I can be a head coach of an entire team. I don't know if they're compatible. But anyway, good luck to Eddie George as the new head coach at Tennessee State. It's going to be interesting. Whenever these guys, you ever wonder, like, do they really want to do that? The real grind of being a coach? Like, is Deion Sanders doing this? And then a couple years later, he's like, man, it's just much easier if I sit in a chair and talk sports. I don't want to do this for a living.
Well, it seems like one of those things, too. Like, does it work well in football? Because, I mean, it seems to be working well in basketball.
Yeah,
you see Patrick Ewing, Jalen Rose. Yeah. But
a lot of recruiting,
does
a lot
it work
of work
in football?
Sometimes you wake up and you go, man, I worked really hard so I don't have to do the grind anymore.
You're listening to Wake Up Call
on the Sportsnap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue along. It's a Masters Monday. Hideki Matsuyama winning the green jacket yesterday. Japan celebrates. I think it was it was expected that eventually this young man would win a major. He had been so good, incredible ball striker, just a guy that's like, whenever he's in a tournament, he hovers around the leaderboard, may not always win, but he's close. He's won a number of times on tour.
Yeah, I almost feel like he's always in the top 10.
Yeah, and it's, you know what else too? Listen, here's the thing about golf. I'll tell you, I know this because people are just in the sport. They're just, they don't want to create controversy. That's why Brandel Chambly on the Golf Channel always gets in trouble because he says things that are true. Whereas golf people tend to say nice things all the time. Listen, whenever there's a young man that's coming on tour that starts doing really good things, whenever an announcer like Nance or Scott Van Pelt or anybody that's kind of talks about golf, they'll say things like, Jack Nicklaus said he expects this young man to win a couple of majors in his career. They say that about everybody. No, Jack Nicklaus, Gary Player, the old guys never say, yeah, I just don't think this kid's got it at all. Like, they always give complimentary, oh, I expect this man to win a number of green jackets. I expect this man to win plenty of tournaments. It's what everybody says. Matsuyama was a guy, though, that people would say, here's why he should win a major. He wins it because he strikes the ball better than everybody out here. He can hit every shot that you need him to hit. And so those flowing compliments that you pretty much get from everybody. There'll be a young player that will have a really good U.S. Open and somebody will, oh, he'll win multiple majors. We may never hear from him again. That's how crazy the sport is. But people were specific about Matsuyama. They would say, look, he's the best ball striker that we have on the tour. Now, have you ever played with a pro? Not a good amateur, not a buddy that like shoots 70, I mean, a professional player, like a guy who's a pro, or even if he's not a pro, he's got a level of a pro. What is so unique about those guys is that whatever they want to hit when their game is on, they'll hit. If they need to cut the ball 5 yards, they'll cut the ball 5 yards. If they need to hit a high draw 3 yards, they can do that. They just have this shot-making ability. And Chambly was talking about this on the Golf Channel about Will Zalatoris. And he was saying, Zalatoris cannot draw the ball consistently with his driver, but he can with his 3-wood. So he was a guy that was short on a lot of the holes that you needed a consistent draw. Right? Augusta is all about the draw. If you're a fader of the golf ball and you can't draw it very well, you don't win at Augusta. You have to be able to draw the ball. Left-handers whose right-hand draw is a fade for them, they tend to do very well at the Masters. And so Chambly was saying how Zalatoris just doesn't have enough confidence in his driver to make the big draws, but he does with his 3-wood, but he would still be a little short. But Matsuyama can take any club and do anything he wants with it when his swing's on. So if he wants to hit it, again, make a 10-yard draw, 15-yard draw, fade, whatever. When his swing is on, he can hit any shot. And if you've ever played with a guy who's got professional-level talent, they're playing a completely different game from the standpoint of what they're wanting to do with the golf ball and what you and I may want to do with the golf ball. Some of us are just lucky to get it up in the air. Maybe we try to hit it a little straight, which is really hard to do. Or we're just trying to get it somewhere around the green. They're aiming for specific spots on the green and making a ball move in the air the way they want. And Matsuyama is the best at that among the people that are on the tour. So that's why when Jack Nicklaus talked about him at the Memorial, and why he would say this kid is going to win some majors, it wasn't just a really nice compliment for a kid and, you know, let it be that. I mean, what harm is it if 10, 15 years from now, you go back to a 90-year-old Jack Nicklaus and go, that Matsuyama kid never won. He's like, what do you want from me? I mean, back then it looked like he was going to win. What do you want? You just give out a compliment, let it settle. But they were really confident. People were really confident about him winning because he's got some skills. But he doesn't putt well. And this week he putted great. He putted fine. And his short game was amazing. His chip on 13 from behind the green, that's as good as it gets. That's as good of a short game skill as you'll see a golfer make. And it's Mickelson-like, man. It was like, I need to hit this to land right there. And if I land it right there, then the ball is going to kick over here, and then it's going to catch this slope. And then if it goes at the right speed, it'll just funnel down to the cup, and I'll have a two-footer.
I would say even his chip from the bunker on 18?
Yeah.
Because of what the moment was asking for
sure.
of him, that, you know, it's like, hey, you got three shots.
Knock it in.
And
just plop it on the
chip,
green.
He two-putted.
Yeah, he two-putted.
Xander
Schauffele, the same thing. Schauffele had a beautiful bunker shot on 15.
Yeah.
And he's one of the top sand players in the game. But so it was, I mean, again, it was a guy that, look, this isn't surprising. This didn't blow everybody away. This didn't come out of nowhere. He's been building to this for quite a while. And he, you know, like Tommy Nakajima, Jumbo Ozaki, a number of the Japanese players that have played in the Masters. I mean, again, you know, I know that they revere their athletes, Naomi Ozaki in tennis, right? And they cherish their athletes. This guy had the country on, yeah. You know,
now,
going nuts.
Looking ahead to next year, the Augusta chefs, they've got to be excited for dinner.
Sure. But maybe he'll throw a curveball.
And ask for pigs in a blanket?
Yeah, maybe so.
No, he can't do that.
Maybe he'll throw a little curveball. We'll say, I don't know.
I'm excited to see what it is.
I am too. I'm really excited to see what it is. Will Zalatoris' friends were kidding him that if he won the Masters, that he should have a Taco Bell dinner. Will Zalatoris doesn't look like he's eaten Taco Bell in his entire life. Will Zalatoris doesn't look like he's eaten anything in his entire life. Yeah. Give me a break. Fast food? Are you kidding me? Then give me that kid's metabolism, because if he's woofing down Taco Bell every night and looking like a 90-pound string bean, then give me his metabolism. Forget his golf game. I want his ability to process fat. Give me a break. That kid is as skinny as I've ever seen a kid play professional golf. I mean, he makes Justin Thomas look like a whale. Are you kidding me? And he has that thin face too. He has that face that is kind of drawn in a little bit. Like he's really hungry. He was great too. He was really good. It's just not a lot of excitement on the back nine. Not a lot of fire.
No, I mean it felt like there was. It felt like something was building. Especially since Schauffele was on a charge.
Yeah.
Then, you know, it was like really, you know, making a run, making it. Because there was a point where it felt like Matsuyama was like five strokes ahead of everybody.
Yeah. One point he was six.
Yeah, then you blink, and it felt like in a blink of an eye, it's like, oh, man, Schauffele's right there.
Yeah.
And then 16.
Yeah, and then that was it. 16 was it.
And then you just sat back and was like, well, this literally is that – you know, old adage, 'tis to lose, because it was.
Yeah, it really was. But you and I were talking before the show, and you made a really good point. Maybe the story isn't who won. Maybe the story is who wasn't around for the weekend.
Yeah. That was surprising when that list came out and you saw all the cuts, and you're sitting there like, wait, what?
What made this weekend, this week, I should say, so bizarre? It wasn't like it was...
Because the rain
crazy
delay,
awful.
The rain delay was on Saturday, right?
Yeah.
Memory serves. Yeah, it was on Saturday. So I mean, that wasn't an excuse.
Yeah.
I guess the only one that we can excuse is Brooks Koepka.
Well, he's coming off surgery.
Yeah, so we can say there and go, you know what? Yeah, three weeks after
Johnson,
knee surgery. But that's amazing to me.
That is amazing. I mean, Dustin Johnson's played well in the past in April, but maybe he needs like the fall conditions where I can fire every flag and it's all soft.
I mean, it's not common for the reigning champion to miss the cut, right?
Oh yeah, no. Usually, you know, they usually show up. You know, listen, it doesn't take it. You know, you play pretty decently. You don't have to be in contention. You can make the cut. I was talking about Phil Mickelson. Mickelson made the cut.
Yes, he did.
And I was saying.
Another thing, are we done with Bryson DeChambeau now? Can we
at
be
the
done?
Masters?
Can we be done with it?
Until he changes his mindset, man. He cannot. He's trying to outthink a golf course where it's touch, feel, and just instinct. That's the problem. He's trying to overanalyze and mathematics, using mathematics and algorithms to try to figure out Augusta. And it doesn't work that way. Because the course is weird. I mean, it is, you know, it's just a weird place. The undulations on that golf course are really so different than other places. There's no other course like it on the tour where you are getting those. Like, guys who play there come back. Like, the first time a guy goes to the Masters, he comes back and he says, look, it's the hilliest place we play. Like, without question. The undulations, the ups and downs, the side hill lies, the downhill lies. The downhill lies in uphill greens. The uphill lies in the downhill greens. They're everywhere. They happen everywhere. And he's trying to overanalyze it. But he stunk. I was glad he made the cut. He made a little bit of noise on Saturday, but that was it. And then he just blew up.
I just feel like we should be done with him.
I think so, too. He's going to win the PGAs of the world.
Yeah,
the Opens are suited depending on where the Opens are. Like where he really can just blast it and wedge it. But Augusta's just a different beast.
I mean, because it feels like especially the last three. There's so much hype around him.
Yeah,
he's like, oh, he's going to outdrive everybody. He's gonna hit the green on a par four, and we don't see it. He doesn't have the Masters touch, doesn't have the Masters feel. It's not the same thing as when Phil kept getting close but never winning.
Right.
You know, I mean, he's not even a contention.
Yeah, you know, he was not around. By the way, speaking of Phil, what a nice week for Phil Mickelson, huh?
Yeah.
Going to be 51 in June. He shows up at Augusta where he's a champion, gets to eat the dinner, gets to be in all the pictures, gets to go out and play one of the greatest golf courses for the week in a tournament setting where it's just in pristine condition. And he takes home a cool $119,000 for the week. I don't know how much gas for the jet that is, but that's a pretty good week.
But that's covered in sponsorship, so he's fine.
You know, pretty good. Like, again, we talk about this with the Masters. One of the reasons you want to win the Masters is because the U.S. Open only allows you to return as a defending champ for a couple of years. The British Open allows you to do it till you're 60, but the Masters, it's for life. For life. Every week, for the rest of your life, you get to show up to this tournament. No matter what your game is in, no matter if you've been playing anymore, it doesn't matter. There is no prerequisite for playing in the Masters tournament if you're a champion, a former champion. You don't even have to be playing golf. You can be a commentator. You don't even have to be, like, Nick Faldo could play in the Masters. He doesn't, but he could if he wanted to. He gets invited. The Masters, they kind of suggest that you don't when you reach a certain age, but they don't take it away from you if you decide against it, if you really want to do it. And Mickelson shows up, makes the cut, makes himself some money, and leaves. Has a great week, great time, great week. And he gets thrown on TV because he's Phil, even if he's not in contention, because he'll do something pretty cool. And so he has a fine week. All right. It is on Twitter at Tony D Radio at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. We'll talk more Masters coming up next hour. We've got the good, the bad, and the dumb. We'll get to the Mets' big mistake yesterday as well as we continue along its wake-up call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
All right, this hour of Wake Up Call presented by Rocket Mortgage. Ready for a new home? Rocket can. I think one thing I was disappointed with was that, you know, they only could allow a certain amount of people into Augusta National. It didn't have the same electric on the grounds feel.
Yeah.
I know last November they had hardly anybody. There was like family and friends watching people play golf. And then at least there was
enough.
But
you know what it felt like this time around? I mean, outside of, you know, the other master tweets that were kept coming out where people like, oh, I spotted this guy. Look who's on this. Look
yeah,
who's on TV.
That's true.
It's like all the celebrities got in.
Yeah, that's right. But like 16 is the 16th hole is like people sit on the side hill of the hole and they sit around the hole. It creates this huge like arena when they get up to the 16th hole, and it sort of lacked that a little bit. But, you know, what are we going to do next year?
I mean,
be more.
Look at us. I mean, we're complaining. You know, fans are finally getting back on a course.
Yeah,
we're like, it wasn't enough.
It's not. Yeah, for me, it's 100% or I hate it. Like, they got, like, we got 80%. No.
I did sit back, and when they did the aerial shot of 18, and, you know, you can see Matsuyama and Schauffele walking up to the hole at 18, and you see the grandstand filled. And I was like, wow, that is something we have not seen in forever. So, and I did marvel at that. But, yeah, I'm with you that, you know, there should have been more.
I got a quick story. When I was at the Masters in 90, I was near the 18th hole. I wasn't quite near the green. It was 1990. It was a playoff between Nick Faldo and Ray Floyd. And so I knew, I had a feeling like it was going to go to the playoffs. So I ran to 10 to watch the 10th. So then the guys came down and they hit their shots and both of them hit it on the green. And so I had a decision. Do I stand here and hope that one of the guys two putts or one of the guy makes the putt? Or do I take my chance and get a good spot for 11? So I said, well, I'll wait a little bit. So I waited until Faldo putted and he missed. And then Ray Floyd had a shorter putt, but still long. And I figured he was going to miss. So I started running. I started running to 11, but it was kind of chaotic. But when I ran across the 14th green, there was nobody around, like no security, no nothing. I ran on to the 14th green and just to feel it, just to be like, how hard is these greens? Like, how tough are these greens? It is unlike anything you will ever feel at a golf course. It was like painted concrete. It was like green painted concrete. It was the hardest surface. I'm like, how do they even get the ball to stop on this thing? It was incredible. The Masters is a really, really special place. We've got hour two coming up next.